being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
Hello. This month's book is The Night Watch by Sergei Lukyanenko. The Night Watch is the first of a series of linked novels based initially in and around Moscow. In his books, the world is divided into two types of people: ordinary mortals, such as we are, and others, individuals with supernatural powers. All the mythological creatures from fairy stories or legend are, in fact, others, from magicians to vampires. When an other discovers their powers, they are wooed by the two sides, light and dark, until they make a choice and join one camp. To keep a balance between good and evil, there is an arrangement with the watchkeepers from both sides policing their opposite numbers. The Night Watch guard the hours of darkness, ensuring the dark side don't prey on forbidden people or corrupt the innocent. The Day Watch ensures no gratuitous acts of goodness tilt society towards the light.
Igor didn't want to go out. When his parents left to go to work and the door slammed behind them, he felt the fear immediately. And he knew that outside the empty apartment, the fear would turn into terror. There was nothing that could save him, nothing anywhere. But at least his home gave him the illusion of safety. Last night, the world had crumbled, completely collapsed. Igor had always admitted quite openly, at least to himself, if not to others, that he wasn't really brave. But he wasn't exactly a coward either. There were some things it was only right to be afraid of. Young thugs, maniacs, terrorists, disasters, fires, wars, deadly diseases. He thought of them all humped together and all equally distant. All these things really did exist, but at the same time they remained beyond his everyday experience. Follow simple rules. Don't wander the streets at night. Don't go into unfamiliar districts. Wash your hands before eating. Don't jump on the railway lines. It was possible to be afraid of unpleasant things and at the same time know there wasn't much chance they would mess up your life. Now, everything had changed. There were some things you couldn't hide from, things that shouldn't exist, that couldn't exist. But vampires did exist. He remembered it all distinctly. The horror hadn't wiped his memory clean, the way he'd vaguely hoped it would yesterday when he was running home, breaking the rules by running across the street without looking. And his timid hope that in the morning everything that had happened would turn out to be a dream had proved wrong too. It was all true. It couldn't possibly be true, but it was. It had happened yesterday. It had happened to him. He'd been late coming home, sure, but he'd come home later than that before. Even his parents, who Igor was quite certain hadn't realised yet that he was almost 13, thought nothing of it. When he left the swimming pool with the other guys, yes, it was 10 o'clock already, they'd all piled into McDonald's and sat there for about 20 minutes. That was the usual thing, too. After training, everyone who could afford it went to McDonald's. Then they all walked to the metro together. It wasn't far, along a brightly lit street. 8 of them together. Everything was still fine then. It was in the metro that he started feeling uneasy. He looked at his watch, stared around at the other passengers, but there was nothing suspicious, except that Igor could hear music. And then things that couldn't happen had started happening. Without knowing why, he'd turn into a dark, stinking alleyway. He'd walked up to a girl and a young guy who were waiting for him. They'd lured him there, and he offered his own neck to the girl, to her long, sharp fangs that weren't even human. Even now, at home on his own, Igor could feel that chill, that sweet, enticing tingle running across the skin. He'd wanted it to happen. He'd been afraid, but he'd wanted the touch of the gleaming fangs, the sharp, short pain. And then, there'd be something else. There had to be. And no one in the whole world could help him. Igor remembered the way the woman who was walking her dogs had looked straight through him. An alert glance, not at all indifferent. She hadn't been frightened. She simply couldn't see what was happening. Igor had only been saved by the third vampire turning up, that pale guy with the Walkman who'd started trailing him back in the metro. They'd fought over him the way hungry, full-grown wolves quarrel over a deer they've cornered, but not killed yet. Then Everything had got confused. It all happened too fast. Someone had shouted something about some watch or other, about the twilight. There was a flash of blue light and one vampire just crumbled into dust right there in front of his eyes, just like in the movies. The girl was howling because she'd had something splashed into her face. Then he'd fled in panic.
The Night Watch follows Anton, a young and inexperienced member of the Watch, unwittingly saving a young woman from an exceptionally powerful curse that threatens a whole area of the city. He in turn threatens the uneasy truce between the two sides, and his actions have the power to trigger a major disaster, perhaps Armageddon itself. Through three interlinked stories, the causes of this showdown are revealed, and Anton's fate becomes entwined with the destiny of the entire world.
To a large extent, our powers are borrowed. The Dark Ones draw theirs from the suffering of humans. Things are a lot simpler for them. They don't even have to cause people any pain. They can just wait, just keep their eyes open, and keep absorbing people's suffering, like drinking a cocktail through a straw. We can do the same, only with one small difference. We draw strength from people who are feeling good when they're happy. But there's one little difficulty that makes the process easy for the Dark Ones and almost forbidden to us. Happiness and sorrow are not just two levels on a single scale of human emotions. If they were, there'd be no such thing as radiant sorrow or malicious joy. They're two parallel processes, two equal currents of power that others can feel and use. When a dark magician drinks in someone's pain, it only increases. When a light magician takes someone's joy, it decreases. We can absorb power at any moment, but we very rarely allow ourselves to. That day, I decided that I was entitled. I took a little bit from a couple locked in each other's arms at the entrance to the metro. They were happy, very happy just then. But I could tell that the lovers were parting, and for a long time, and sadness would inevitably come to them anyway. I decided I had the right. Their joy was bright and rich, like a bouquet of scarlet roses, proud and delicate. I touched a child as he ran past. He was happy. He didn't feel the oppressive heat. He was running to buy an ice cream. He would soon restore his power. It was as simple and pure as wild flowers, a posy of daisies that I gathered without hesitation. I saw an old woman in a window. The shadow of death was already hovering over her. She could probably sense it herself, but she was still smiling. Her grandson had called around to see her that day, probably only to check if his grandmother was still alive or if the valuable apartment in the centre of Moscow was free now. She understood that too, but she was still happy. I felt ashamed, unbearably ashamed. But I touched her and took a little power. A fading orange and yellow bunch of asters and autumn leaves. I walked along just as I used to in my nightmares, when I handed out happiness to everyone on all sides, making sure no one went away without his share. But the trail I left behind me now was quite different. Slightly faded smiles, wrinkled foreheads, lips pressed together in doubt. It was pretty easy to see where I'd been. If I met a day watch patrol, they wouldn't stop me. And even if any light ones saw what was happening, they wouldn't say anything. I was doing what I thought was necessary, what I believed I had a right to do, borrowing, stealing. And the way I used the power I'd taken would seal my destiny. Either I'd pay back all my debts in full, or the twilight would open its arms to embrace me. When a light magician starts drawing power from humans, he's gambling everything on a single throw of the dice, and the usual balancing of accounts between the actions of the two watchers didn't apply. Not only did the amount of good that was done have to exceed the amount of evil I had caused, I would have to be certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'd paid everything back in full. The lovers, the children, the old people, the group drinking beer by the statue. I'd been afraid their happiness might turn out to be a sham, but it was genuine, and I took their power. Forgive me. I could apologize to every one of them three times over. I could pay for what I'd taken, but I wouldn't really mean it. I was simply fighting for love, in the first place. and only after that for you, the humans for whom this new happiness was being prepared. But what if I were really doing that as well? What if every time you fought for love, you were fighting for the whole world? For the whole world, not against the whole world.
A physicist in training, Lukianenko began writing short stories and science fiction novels, some loosely based around video games. He toyed with the sort of fantasy world found in the Watch series for some years before it made his name beyond the boundaries of the old Soviet state. Begun in 1998 and translated in 2006, the first part of the Watch trilogy reflects the world of the millennium and offers some interesting insights into Russian thought at the turn of the century. There were originally three books planned: The Night Watch, The Day Watch, and The Twilight Watch. And they're remarkably successful in engaging the sympathy of the reader, even when the hero might be a vampire on a metro train. The later books expanded into a total of six and attracted a Western readership following a film of The Night Watch in 2006. Following the invasion of the Ukraine, however, he has fallen out of favour with the science fiction and fantasy world due to his outspoken and sometimes extreme support for the war. In September of this year, he was subjected to a resolution condemning his views by the World Science Fiction Society, and his invitation to speak at the 2023 World Convention was withdrawn. Now a highly controversial figure, it is sad to read these stories, so imaginative and with a strong moral core, and reflect on what the author currently says. This conflict between private and public faces of an artist is nothing new. Byron was an odious man in many ways. Picasso was a bully, and Karajan was Hitler's favourite conductor. I have enjoyed reading these books over a number of years and have the first four. The Last Watch is number four. I don't believe in burning books, especially if, for whatever reason, I disagree with the writer's personal views. But sadly, I don't think I will be buying the last two in a series. Still, if you can borrow them from a library or a friend, they are certainly worth the read.
And another perfect summation there of the Book of the Month by Jenny Finch. And I felt that actually we were visualising the medium, so I felt it's only important that we kind of kept a Halloween theme going for the Dark Watch in terms of our portraiture and images with respect to that. I mean, I'm sure it would be much appreciated by Anton and so on. Rob, let's come to you first. Your thoughts with respect to this particular aspect, which I'll be honest, I've gone over all over the place with this. I mean, I've been, yes, it's good to, oh my goodness, it's, you know, anyway, what were your thoughts? You seem to be muted, Rob. Maybe we just need to unmute yourself. There we are. That's all good. Either that or the Dark Watch had actually captured your thoughts.
I think it had. I think it definitely had. I've been turned to that side. I'm totally in agreement with you, Alex. I was kind of all over the place with this as I was reading it. But I have to say, when I ended that the first book of the trilogy, I really did. I thought it was a really strong finish, and it put a lot of things into place. And I did enjoy it overall. I wasn't sure I was going to when I started it.
Yeah, and I think also the fact that it was almost three books in one also bemused me. You kind of had one sort of thing, and that. But that, he did actually interconnect it quite neatly together in terms of the views, in terms of the thoughts, and actually, I can see the sort of philosophy. I wouldn't agree with the notion that it's a Russian Harry Potter. I think it's a different style. I mean, yes, there is magic that's there. Yes, there are wizards, there are warlocks, there are werewolves, there are vampires, and so on. But it's a lot tougher than Harry. I mean, let's face it, Ron Weasley didn't actually hit the bottle on a regular basis and actually become completely inebriated on vodka. You know, there are issues with respect to that, which I just thought, no, this is an adult book, which is obviously Sergei's trick into fantasy and so on. Jessica, I'm not sure how far you've got with the book as yet. I know we might be sort of coming back to you, but your thoughts on Night Watch?
Yeah, so I thought this was next week for some reason, so I've not gotten far in the book. But I still feel like it's interesting to think about the concept of the book, and translated works in general are just fascinating. I got really interested into the idea of a translated work and the debate between, is it a new kind of piece of literature? Is the original author the author? How do we fit the translator into this? And it makes me curious about maybe what was different in the Russian version, or how the syntax might have changed. So I think that whenever we read translated books, that's always like at the front of my mind. But also seeing that this book was from the 2000s and involves so much supernatural influence, I think is so interesting, because I feel like there's kind of a lull of those trends, at least in the US, between Interview with a Vampire and then Twilight. I feel like those kind of phases, there was a bit of a lull between them. So it's interesting seeing that in Russia, they kind of had this, like, this book was out there. So I think that anytime you have, especially like supernatural creatures in a modern setting like Moscow, it just makes it that much more dynamic. And I think it kind of plays into the human love of imagining there's something a bit greater around us, and you know, anything around you could be a little bit special.
The two excerpts we actually chose for the readings, one actually involves Anton effectively taking people's happiness away to actually store up his own happiness, and contrasting that with the whole issue of how he kind of works through life and so on, and his own experience. I didn't warm to Anton, and I think Jessica's point about the translation is particularly interesting. I noted that in the in the text that we see, obviously the English version, it's the twilight that's actually mentioned, whereas actually in the movie version, it's the gloom. And I think the gloom is actually a better concept than the twilight in terms of just using where they go into, in terms of this liminal area between, you know, what we can perceive, what our senses see, and where we happen to be with respect to that. Other issues, again, I think in terms of the text, again, it took me time to warm to any. I will say one character I did actually quite like, and that was the tiger changeling. I thought she was good, she was competent, she seemed to be on message, etc. But it was a fascinating sort of text, and I think overall, again, echoing sort of Rob's view, I would come away thinking, yeah, it's okay. I found a bit of a tough read. It took me a lot of time to actually get into it. It was, maybe it was just because of issues and working within that. But I found it was a case of, oh, how far have I got? Oh my God, I've only actually gone 14% of the way through it, and it's like wading through treacle. But you can kind of get there in the end. It is an epic. I'm not sure whether he's channeling aspects, and in fact, I think in terms of the lead character, I kind of got a sort of cross between Pierre Bezukhov in Solzhenitsyn and in War and Peace, Tolstoy's War and Peace, and sort of aspects of Russian angst with Alexander Solzhenitsyn as well. I mean, I'm not sure whether that's just something to do with being a Russian, but you know, again, lots of interesting lines with respect to that.
Didn't you think that the people were sorry for putting in, but didn't you think that the people were more real in some respects, in the fact that that they weren't all likable? There was real flaws in the characters, and even the difference between the light and the dark. Who was really who were really the goodies or the baddies? It's not clear cut. And I did like the fact that Anton wasn't likable, and that he often did some pretty nasty things, or he didn't behave in the way that he should have done. It made
I
him
mean,
more sort of believable.
He didn't treat Svetlana at all well, really. I mean, there was
No.
Svetlana who was going through a whole process. You know, I mean, from the moment we're sort of introduced to him and so on, and the fact that he betrays his best friend, the vampire, and so on, there are all sorts of issues within that where you think, yeah, okay. I mean, if you were Ukrainian reading this, you'd say typical Russian, but let's not go into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, just sort of challenging aspects from that perspective. I mean, Jenny, did you have any favourite characters, or like Rob, is it a case of the fact that they were flawed, the fact that they actually all had their issues was part of their charm?
Yes, I think it's one of the things that makes it so interesting. It's not, although it deals with black, white, good, evil, as Rob says, there's an awful lot of intermingling. I would have liked to have known and read more about Svetlana. I thought she was absolutely fascinating. And, you know, that didn't happen, but yeah, it's a pity. I would have liked to have known more about her.
As opposed to Boris Ignatievich, of course, to give him his real name, that again is almost not mentioned, and again is brought through within the field. Interesting, of course. I think the touch of having, in theory, the Night Watch people keeping their eye on the bad guys, and the
Yeah.
Day Watch people being the bad guys keeping their eye on the good guys, in terms of basically making sure that neither side can actually move into their own particular zones. And I did like the notion that actually if you had a vampire who kind of went off topic, shall we say, and started, taking, then basically they'd be subject to all sorts of challenges, etc. That kind of notion of a almost a series of laws that need to be balanced, and the checks and balances that were actually there. I thought that was well handled. I mean, Jessica, is this a book that you're keen to continue? You want to get to the end of it, and you think, yeah, I'm going to work with it, or have we sort of said, oh, I don't know.
No, I definitely do. And I think I'm going to take up Jenny's suggestion to really look at libraries instead of purchasing them all. But I really do want to keep reading this, especially because I don't really have an opinion on the main character about how much I like all these characters yet. So I feel like I would like to keep reading to kind of find out what I really think about all of them by the end. I do have a habit of disliking main characters a lot of the time, except for that time we read Jen. Because I love Jen, how can you not? But with this one, it's a bit darker, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Jen, the border collie, actually go head to head with the Night Watch thing. That would be a wonderful mashup that the world needs to see, basically. I'll have a word with Peter Kerr. Maybe you might like to sort of work something in. Although, given Litvinenko's propensity for actually suing people, we best steer away from that. You mentioned a very important point, Jenny, of course, in terms of the author. And yes, it's fair to say that he hasn't done himself any favors in the global side of things with his views on the Russian invasion of Ukraine and other areas with respect to that. Tough call. I mean, Rob, I'll turn to you first. Is this something, because obviously this is somebody who, if you're having a conversation with him, you'd say, are you insane, or words to that effect. Does that mean that we shouldn't consider the writing, and or is it a case of, well, people are entitled to their viewpoints?
I would normally say people are entitled to a viewpoint, but it's very interesting because he talks about communism and fascism, and tries to put them into the into this story. So therefore, he's very much commenting on world issues, and so I find it a lot of difficulty here. Also, because Alex, unfortunately, I had a nightmare when I was downloading the one story. I got a glitch on the internet and ended up buying every book by him.
Oh
So it could not have been a worse author to have done that for me.
yeah, now that's Russian hacking taking to extremes,
Yeah,
that is.
it
You
is.
know,
Yeah, it
you
must have
just want the
been.
one book, they actually sell you all
Yeah.
six.
Yeah, well, no, beyond that, I've got £20 worth of books by him.
Send them back. You can send them
Yeah.
back.
Can you?
Yes.
There we are. An author speaks, right? Another author
Right.
speaks. Extraordinary. I mean, again, in a sense, I thought it was fascinating, his line, which isn't original. It's not an original thought, that actually the great atrocities of the 20th century, the Second World War, the Russian Revolution, were simply powers that we cannot see effectively experimenting with human beings, and the sense that we as human beings are not agents of our own destiny, that effectively we're at the behest of the powers of the darkness and the light, and that that battle is continually carrying on. And I think the movie does actually address this very well. I mean, it's a lot shorter in terms of Night Watch, the film, etc., but does talk about that sort of connection between, you know, you've got opposites, and it's the difference in between the opposites that creates meaning, which is very much the structuralist approach to literature criticism or literary criticism. You have extremes, but actually you don't really deal with those extremes. You deal with the shades of grey that intermingle between us. I mean, is that something, Jenny, that you feel is good for this? I mean, I can't somehow imagine J.K. Rowling connecting with this universe somehow.
I can't either. I like the idea of the gap between that kind of grey area, which is not the gloom, but is that intermingling of the two. And I think he handled that very well with the young magician who couldn't decide which way he was going to go. And he turns up in all three of these sections.
Igor,
who was my favourite, my other favourite character.
Yeah, I kept thinking Mel Brooks movies inevitably, but...
yeah, and I think that Igor's almost a kind of everyman, in that most people go one way or the other. They say we all have the capacity to do great good or great evil. And even if it's little good and little evil, it's still that balancing act. And I think he handles that and sums that up very well. And that is the most important thing, rather than the great magicians at each end with their extreme views. We need less extremes and more ego, I think, in this world.
Yeah.
So there.
And well said. So, Rob, would you like to go for a score out of 10 for Night Watch, the first in an ongoing series, of course, by Sergei Litvinenko?
Yeah, can I just say before, say the score, I think I'm not giving away anything to do with the end, but basically you can read this as a standalone book, which I think is a major strength. That quite often you do trilogies and you get to it and it's just hanging at the end and you think,
yeah. Exactly. You know, you're being manipulated. You're being actually sort of coerced into purchasing another and another and another. And you're quite right. In essence, the book itself is almost a trilogy, because you have three distinct stories that are actually in there, three distinct sequences and three distinct zones, both in terms of climate, in terms of attitude, and in terms of how things are going. And it takes a little while, certainly when you get to the second story, that you think, how is this remotely connected to the first? Other than one or two of the names being the same. Even the characteristics of some of the characters seem to be changing. But, you know, I think it finally sort of sat okay. I mean, as I say, for what it's worth, I was at one stage as low as 5 out of 10, because I thought, this is just frustrating. I'm just not getting it. This is just a chore. It has recovered, and I'm going to go for a 7 out of 10 for this in terms of the overall sequence. I don't think it's a great. I think it's interesting. It's an interesting Russian book and as Jessica said right at the start, I think the translation is probably one of the key factors in terms of how we actually decode this, because I go back to, if you're wading your way through War and Peace, is that the same as what Tolstoy was kind of developing in his own aspect? And maybe that's what Sergei had in mind with respect to this. He wanted a kind of fantasy War and Peace. Anyway, your score, Rob.
7.5.
Jenny?
Yeah.
I agree with Rob. 7.5. It's not great, but it's pretty good in places.
Yeah. So Jessica, you've heard those scores. I don't know, from what you've read so far, where would you be pitching the whole thing?
Well, I'd say I'm at about a 6. I am biased. I love supernatural worlds. But 10 out of 10, we'll keep reading. Figure out the final score.
And we'll have that cliffhanger as we actually move into the next book of the month, by which time Jessica will have finished this particular one and we're moving onto the next sort of element entirely. So, you know, what score will Jessica give Night Watch will be a line we will come to. Jenny, have we decided what the next one is going to be? Have you gone for my suggestion, or are you going for something completely different?
No, I was really tempted to say, let's do my new book, but no, we're going to go for Holmes Coming by Kenneth Johnson.
OK, Kenny Johnson, and of course, Jessica, you, like myself, have met Kenneth Johnson on a number of occasions. So I think it's fair to say that Rob and Jenny are in for a treat with Kenneth Johnson's homecoming. That's all I would say. But even more treats, and we need to actually do this. Jenny, let's talk about your latest book. Is it available now? Can we get hold of it? And when, obviously, will we go through the review process with the whole text?
Right. It's out. It's officially published on the 24th. You can pre-order it at the moment on Amazon. Ebooks will be out in a couple of days. They come out about 10 days, 2 weeks after the main text is printed. I've got a number here already. I've even got bookmarks to go in them. And there you go. It is ready to go.
And the title, of course, is?
Puppy Brain. And Puppy it's written Brain. With my cousin, Jem Cooney. But you can just put Puppy Brain and my name in there and it'll come up on Amazon and it'll come up on other sites as well. You can order it from bookshops. You can order it from a number of sites all over the world, as far away as Australia, New Zealand, the US.
Rob, I think it's fair to say that if anything's worth spending at least £20 worth of copies of Puppy Brain, if you have another incident, then go with respect to this. We will certainly be there. And in the not too distant future, possibly we'll do the usual. We might well be turning again to your good self, Rob, to actually anchor Book of the Month when we're actually reviewing Jenny's copy, because obviously I think it's only fair from that perspective. We'll see how things go and we'll bring on board Ian and a few others. So, Jessica, you're also looking forward to reading Jenny's Puppy Brain?
Yes, I need to come down to Tipperary to get your autograph.
Absolutely. I'll have a book put aside for you, ready, and I'll sign it.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Keep on reading.